This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher, control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train.
Minisode 28, Submission 2477, the Tom Amansky Baseball World commercials. Well, guys, we're recording this minisode because we have the Baseball Hall of Fame coming up in Cooperstown, New York, this year's inductions. And we are celebrating the induction of a certain player who was a legend in MLB during the 1990s for San Diego and Atlanta. We're talking about the crime dog himself, Fred McGriff.
He's the only one that's being inducted this year?
Well, no. I think he was the Veterans Committee or whatever they call the Veterans Committee now? I got to look up who's in the Hall of Fame this year. I don't think anyone got voted in technically. Oh, Jesus. I forgot Scott Rowland got elected in.
I think a lot of us forgot that Scott Rowland got elected in.
And Todd Helton got gypped with 72.2% of the vote. What the hell?
And really, Todd Helton is more deserving than Scott Rowland. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. If Scott Rowland is in the Baseball Hall of Fame, you might as well induct David Wright into the Hall of Fame. But, of course, since Fred McGriff is being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, we got to mention a certain commercial that he did that if you ever watched SportsCenter throughout the 90s and into the early to mid-2000s, you remember this commercial.
It got results.
It did get results. So yeah, this was like a VHS instructional video called like Tom Amansky's like Baseball World's Defensive Drills. And actually the whole video is up on YouTube. It's like 50 minutes. Let me read the description. A complete training program based on the same drills featured at Baseball World's Training Center in Orlando, Florida. So, okay, there's this one commercial that's like a minute and 49 seconds long, but there's the more famous commercial that I think everyone remembers. So let me play the long commercial first. I guess you could say this is like the 12-inch version of the Baseball World commercial.
Quickness, agility, and body control, the essential elements of the winning defensive baseball player. And with Coach Amansky's Defensive Drills video, you'll learn the amazing training secrets of America's finest baseball school. The Defensive Drills video features revolutionary training techniques developed by professional scout and instructor Tom Amansky. Techniques that get results, producing Baseball World's back-to-back-to-back AAU national championship teams and even a gold medal in international competition. In a recent review, Collegiate Baseball Magazine exclaimed, with Coach Amansky's techniques, the future of baseball is here today. Even top professional players are impressed. Just ask Major League superstar Fred McGriff.
I'm so impressed with the instructional videos by Coach Amansky that I've given them my full endorsement. When you watch them, you'll know why.
The Defensive Drills video is available now for immediate shipping. It makes a great gift and benefits players of all ages and ability levels. To order your copy, call toll-free 1-800-544-1000. That's 1-800-544-1000. Call now.
Man, Fred McGriff said that with all the passion of Julio from Boot Wireless. This is Julio for Tom Amansky's Baseball World Drills. Come check the VHS feedback. Got anything you need right in this tape. But okay, this is what you're here for. The famous commercial that has probably played in your head rent-free for like over 25 years. So let's get on with it.
Discover the amazing training secrets of America's finest baseball school in an exciting instructional video. Baseball World's Defensive Drills video features professional scout and instructor Tommy Mansky and the same techniques that produced his back-to-back-to-back AAU National Championship teams. Collegiate Baseball Magazine's editor calls it a masterpiece, the best drill video ever produced. This video is endorsed by top professionals like superstar Fred McGriff.
This is the instructional video that gets results.
The Defensive Drills video benefits players of all ages and ability levels and makes a great gift too, so call now.
I'm just fixated on everybody in a circle playing keep away by rolling. I'm like, what are you trying to teach there?
It's defensive drills, Chico. You have to learn good defense.
By slapping a ball on the ground?
Yeah, this is produced the Baseball World's AAU back-to-back-back national champions. I mean, Fred said it. It gets results.
Well, it could teach baseball players reaction time, you know, batting the ball as fast as you can, trying to keep it away from your area or getting through your legs. Because, you know, think about the positions that would really use that. Talking your shortstops and your second baseman especially. Can't have the balls getting by or else, you know, that's a easy single or a double possibly.
That is true.
It is true. Well, we saw that commercial play nonstop for years and years on ESPN. But in 2021, on Kenny Mayne's final episode of SportsCenter, he invited a special guest for his final episode, Fred McGriff himself. And in that interview with Fred McGriff, Kenny Mayne got Fred to make a stunning admission about the video. So, guys, are we ready to hear this shocking admission that Fred makes in this interview?
I am firmly seated and my hands are in their armrests. I am ready to be shocked.
Mike, are you ready to be shocked?
I don't know if I can handle this.
We'll get through this together, Mike.
Yes, here we go.
Reveal this to the nation, okay? Honestly, I've never seen the video in my life. Okay, you know what I'm saying? Like, when I was like 19 years old, Steve Christmas told me, hey, go visit Tom Emanski down in Orlando, right? He can help you out with your hitting. So I'm like, yeah, okay. So now 5 years later, I'm in the big leagues. So Tom's like, hey, Fred, you mind helping me out this with this video? And I'm like, hey, dude, no sweat. I'm in the big leagues. Big leagues now, right? You know what I'm saying, Kenny? But I've never seen the video.
You're a phony. Hey, this guy's a great big phony.
Fred McGriff has lied to us for all these years.
Well, now, I'm not going to say he fully lied. He did work with Tom Emanski, maybe not defensively, but obviously, you know, there were some results. Fred McGriff is going to enter the Hall of Fame soon. So, I mean, you got to give Tom Emanski a sliver of credit, I think.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Hey, he did win back-to-back-to-back titles.
I would be curious as to what other major leaguers Tom Emanski worked with, besides Fred McGriff.
I'm on the case.
Oh, good. Live research.
Live research.
While you're doing that, let me Wikipedia search, because obviously we know Sandy going to Atlanta. He was with Toronto at the start of his career. Oh, Fred had two stints with the Devil Rays from 98 to 01 and 04. He had a stint with the Cubs from 01 and 02. And he was with the Dodgers in 03. Wow, I don't even remember that at all.
I'm sort of like you. I remember him up to Atlanta. And I think I remember the Devil Rays the first stint. But seeing he was with the Cubs and the Dodgers and then the Devil Rays again in 04... that's a blur to me. I remember the expansion year and like the year after with the Devil Rays, but like after 2000, I don't know if I just lost interest or if he fell off the face of the earth or a combination of the two. He certainly didn't fall off the face of the earth because he was still putting up good numbers.
And I think at Tropicana Field, they are selling Fred McGriff Devil Rays jerseys now. I'd buy one.
Okay, I have not found anybody besides Fred McGriff who will readily admit to being associated with Tom Emanski. But I did find a report from Eric Malinowski, who basically said that Tom Emanski reached his preferred target audience with the same commercial for the video we just saw, aired during the MLB Home Run Derby in Cleveland. Everything was done by phone and by hand back then, says Teddy Craig, the former baseball world coach. If we knew the commercial was coming on at, say, 9:02, you had to be ready to go because everything went directly into those two or three phone lines and it got very busy. But no, nobody's admitting to have been coached by Tom Emanski. However, did you know he had another video?
He did?
Tom Emanski's professional bunting techniques. Yeah, it's out of stock right now. It's out of print, so it'll probably command a hefty amount on the secondary market. Or if you're really diligent, you can find it on YouTube for free.
Hold on. Could you imagine Fred McGriff trying to bunt?
No, I can't. I mean, I'm all for fundamentals, but seriously?
Well, guys, can you believe it? I mentioned the Fred McGriff Devil Rays jersey. But while I was trying to find it, I stumbled onto something even cooler than that, which means it's time to play non-eBay Price is Right. Now let's get the sexy sax music ready for this.
Yeah, put some steak on that!
Well, guys, I found this on thebayrepublic.com. This comes direct from Tropicana Field when you order this. It is.
It's an homage shirt?
Yes, an MLB Jam shirt of Wade Boggs and Fred McGriff with the Devil Rays.
Yo, whatever they're charging, I will pay double for two. 2X. 2X.
Mike, you're just stunned by this.
That's epic.
All right. I'm going to start the bidding with you, Mike.
Okay. I'm trying to think how much I paid for my NBA Jam shirt of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. In store. Oh, gosh. You said this is online, not in store. In store cost me, I think, $35.
Well, so, remember, this does come direct from Tropicana Field, so.
And they're going to charge more, yeah. And I know that Progressive Field has sold MLB Jam shirts with, I think, Shane Bieber and I forget who else. And I believe they were $39.95. That's my bid, $39.95.
$39.95. Chica, what's your bid?
$34.
$34. Guys, the price for this shirt. $40. Mike, you were off by a nickel.
I was thinking about $40, but I wanted to keep it at the under $40 price point, $39.95. I know my shirts. Like I said, I've seen them at Progressive Field. And I've got the NBA Jam Cavs shirt, one of them. I need to get the other one. So yeah, I know about that stuff. And they fit really well. Seriously, yeah. Chico, if you're a 2XL, it should fit you perfectly. I have a 3XL, and it fits me really snugly. It's not too big.
I will say you right this. The shirt I'm currently wearing right now is a 3. I'm living in it. So
you're not a 3, though.
I know. But I feel comfortable in a 3.
Okay, I get that, but yeah, I'm not surprised you're swimming in it because you're not a 3, and gosh knows you're smaller than me, both height-wise and girth-wise.
Well, on Wednesday, I did get a buy one, get one free baseball shirt deal on Homage. for some top shirts, and I did get the top Stadium Club baseball shirt.
Very nice. Very nice. I did not take advantage of that, and I sort of regret not taking part of that.
Yeah. But you know what? We're not going to regret this classic commercial that got us results. And you know what? It was a thing on TV.
Oh, Greg, I got something you may regret. I asked ChatGPT to write me a limerick about Tom Mansky.
Oh, this is going to be fantastic.
I can't wait to hear this.
I knew you'd feel that way.
Oh.
All right. Give me some of that stereotypical Irish music. There we go.
I want to dance a jig.
We'll see if you'll dance a jig after hearing about this. There once was a coach named Mansky, whose baseball skills were quite fancy. With videos in hand, he'd teach the whole land and turn rookies into pros quite dancing.
That's it?
It's a limerick. Five lines.
I don't know. The rhyme scheme's all off, you know?
Well, dancy at the end, that doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, that doesn't... It's like, dancy? I'm just going to hold up the sign. An attempt was made.
Well, Mansky and fancy and dancy. Fancy and dancy rhyme, but Mansky, not so much.
No. Wow!
Discover the defensive skills of America's best men's powder, Chassis. This ingenious product features a power extract blend which has helped thousands of men achieve greatness. Just ask former Major League superstar Fred McGriff.
This is the men's powder that gets results.
Chassis improves your ability to fight sweat, odor, and chafing all day long. Chassis' talk-free formula will help prevent sweat, no matter how much stress life throws your way. Because life is full of surprises. Oh, life. With its HydroShield technology, you'll learn the art of preventing chafe, no matter how hot and repetitive your motions might be. Optimum performance is now within reach. And with natural ingredients like baking soda, you'll also learn how to defend against odor, thus improving your confidence. Your partner and your wingman will approve.
I'm so impressed with the entire line of Chassis products that I've given them my full endorsement. When you try them, you'll know why.
Chassis is available now for immediate shipping. To order, visit Amazon or chassisformen.com. You can even order it back to back to back if you want. And don't forget, it's endorsed by Fred McGriff. Does he really still wear his hat like that? Like way up high? He should be in the Hall of Fame anyway.
Wait a few weeks. He will be in the Hall of Fame. Hey, you know what? I want Fred McGriff as my wingman. Seriously.
Fist bump from Fred McGriff. That's worth $1 million right there.
Oh, my gosh. That entire commercial was worth $1 million. That was great.
Indeed, it
back.
Was.
You get ordered them back to back to back.
And that's where Greg and I lost it. I just saw his face, and we're all trying to keep quiet because it's like, no, didn't do that.
Episode 396, submission number 1046, Angie. Angie aired on the ABC television network from February 8th, 1979 to September 4th, 1980 for 36 episodes over two seasons. If you're listening to this over YouTube, we have to take the theme out because it was a number one hit from Maureen McGovern. I would sing it as aired, but alas, I am too good a singer.
Can I do like a sound-alike version?
You could try.
Okay, wait.
Hold on.
Wait, before you do that, just let our dear listeners know, 36 episodes, 20 more than Uncle Croc's Block and the Hudson Brothers Razzle Dazzle Show. And now, Greg, give us your rendition of the Angie theme. I cannot wait to hear this. Yeah, we're doing a good job humming the theme there.
Yeah. And now for our pod.
Hold on. Time out. Better job than I did with What a Country.
True. And now for our non-YouTube listeners, here's the actual theme. Enjoy!
That was a good rendition, Greg. I really have to say that.
Maureen McGovern is jealous of you right now.
I thought she was in the f***ing room.
You know what? I bet she would have been jealous of my What a Country person.
I bet you she would. Here we are in the late 1970s, early 1980s, the come down of the disco era, which led to a bit of class warfare, as demonstrated by the rise of the yuppie to counter the fall of the working class stiffs. Of course, television would hold a mirror up to society, as is evidenced by Soap, a show that we will never cover on this podcast, but is relevant to the topic at hand. So what happens when two star-crossed people from these separate worlds, as Maureen McGovern sang about, come together and find love? That's the question that's posed by this series, which is created by Gary Marshall and Dale McRaven, fresh off a battery of successes for this network, including Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and Mork and Mindy.
Time out. Was that buzzing someone's new genets?
It's not coming from me. I'm looking at a certain Panamanian.
What buzzing? I don't hear any buzzing. That's probably my air conditioner or my fan or something.
Or your new genics. And for the home audience, Chico is going up to take a look at his air conditioner to see if that's what's causing this noise.
No, it was more like a cell phone.
It sounded like a cell. I agree with you on that. We'll just blame the mutagenics.
What the hell was that?
That's mutagenics.
Yeah, that was mutagenics.
That's mutagenics.
Well, old Frank Thomas and Andy Van Slyke got in your system.
And Willem Dafoe.
And Willem Dafoe and Doug Flutie, yes.
Oh, baby.
It's Sir Willem Dafoe.
I'm not even British. Why did I think you were British? I don't know, man.
Okay, so on one hand, we have a coffee shop waitress by the name of Angelina Falco, working class Italian-American, family-oriented, lives in an apartment with her sister Marie and her mom Teresa. And on the other side, you have a wealthy, well-to-do, waspy pediatrician named Bradley Benson, He says he's a struggling young doctor, but when they finally get to their 2-week anniversary, in which is depicted by the first episode, he reveals that, well, you heard of Filthy Rich? He's Nasty Rich.
Well, I think it's more his family is Nasty Rich than anything else.
Yes, his family is Nasty Rich. They leave him with this big honking house. And it really is just him in that house. Until, you know, Angie moves in to the big house.
So basically, we've summarized the first episode. It is very expository. But also, quoting Butter's dad in Butter's very own episode.
You're a liar! You're a liar! You know something that you're not telling us, you slimy scumbag liar!
One of us, one of us, gooble gobble, gooble gobble, one of us, gooble gobble, gooble gobble. If you've never seen Butter's very own episode of South Park, you're doing yourself such an injustice. That is one of the funniest episodes of South Park ever.
So the blue-collar, urban Italian-American Catholic Falcos and the blue-blooded suburban waspy Bensons, including Brad's thrice married sister and her daughter, who takes a shine to Angie, are all forced to become one big happy family when, at the end of the first episode, Brad proposes to Angie. And at the end of the third episode, Brad and Angie elope. And sometime in the fourth episode, they go through an actual church wedding because Teresa Falco is Angie's mother and she's not having any of this elopement nonsense. No, seriously, she's not. You'll understand when we get to the cast, which we'll do, oh, right now. Playing the title role of Angie Falco Benson is Shia LaBeouf's mother from Even Stevens herself, Donna Pesco.
Hold on, I heard the Nugenics again.
No? Oh.
I told you it was the phone.
See, it was Chico the whole time.
Yeah, okay.
That was about as easy of a solve as it was figuring out that Gary Condit didn't kill Sandra Levy.
Of course. So where were we?
We're talking about Donna Pescow, and where would we know her from?
In the title role of Angie Falco Benson would be Donna Pescow, straight off of Saturday Night Fever, and yet to be the mother of Maureen Flanagan on Out of This World or Shia LaBeouf on Even Stevens. But still cute as a button.
Oh, she is adorable.
Hang on, Chico, have you ever seen the episode of Dash's A Very Special Episode of the Hanukkah?
Lewis gets grounded for Hanukkah and it's all a dream.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a very WTF episode.
He's sticking his finger into Christy Carlson Romano's head.
Okay.
Now, which episode are you guys talking about?
Even Stevens. Dash covered it in a very special episode. It is the Even Stevens where Lewis is grounded for Hanukkah.
What type of thing do you need to do to get suspended or punished on a high holiday?
Break everybody's presents. Because you were huffing them in a Dutch oven of your own making like a fiend.
Damn.
That's what happens, man. All right, on the other side of the equation, playing the role of Dr. Brad Benson, Robert Hayes. And let's be honest, as soon as this show ends, he's going to go on to the role of a lifetime.
Yeah. Simply put, do we really need to tell everybody what role that is? I think we should, but Ted Stryker and Airplane, folks.
Just remember, we're all counting on you. Playing his sister, thrice married Joyce Benson would be Sharon Spellman, who, let's be honest, her character looks down a lot on Angie and her family. This is as long as her career actually goes, but she was in the 1988 remake of The Blob. So there's that. Playing Angie's sister, Marie, is Deborah Lee Scott, another cutie. She's another cutie. And of course, if there was a game show on from the mid-70s to the mid-80s, she was on it. She was incredibly inept. She was incredibly adept at password.
No, I like the way you put it first. Not to cutting that out. I like it. No, she is inept at password. Oh, God, our little gaffes. I love it.
Playing Joyce's daughter, Hillary, a very young Tammy Lauren. And this is before she would sort of re-enter the primetime space as one of the detectives on Martial Law with Sammo Hung and Kelly Hu and eventually Arsenio Hall.
With Kelly Hu?
Kelly Hu.
Kelly Hu, I'm asking you, Kelly Hu?
Kelly Hu, I'm telling you.
Well, answer the question, Kelly
Hu! I am answering the question, it's Kelly Hu!
Oh, get your new Gen X back over here and let's move on. And that was our rendition of Who's On First. You're welcome, people.
And then we have, as Angie's co-worker and best friend, Dee Dee Malloy, Diane Robin. She was only around for the first season and a couple of episodes for the second season, but you would probably remember her as Chandra in RoboCop. I think she ended up living through that movie. And then in recurring appearances, you have Emery Bass as Phipps, the Benson's lawyer, who rather likes Angie, probably because he's not like the Bensons at all. But yeah, he was in Kojak, Dark Shadows, 1776 from 1972. Sadly, no longer with us. Died at 89 in 2015. We have Randall Benson, Brad Benson's father, played by the inimitable John Randolph, who, again, is no longer with us. He died in 2004. But he was Skylar Fox in You Got Mail. He was Sydney Green in Serpico. Serpico? I didn't think we ever mentioned that on this show. And aside from that, he's pretty much a that guy from that thing. He's got a whole lot of credits, and we're not going to go over all of them.
We mentioned in a previous episode that he was the original Frank Costanza on Seinfeld before it went to Jerry Stiller. Greg would have mentioned it, but he was too busy trying to correct baseball stats for the summer league he works at during this episode.
And then we have the three Marys from Angie's school. That's what they call themselves, the three Marys. Mary Mary, Mary Grace, and Mary Catherine. Mary Mary is played by Valerie Bromfield, who went on to be a voice actor. Mary Grace is played by Susan Duvall, who went on to be Lou's nurse in Major League 2.
Ha ha! Now we're starting to roll, boys!
Are you all right?
Oh, yeah! I love this British stuff!
General Spencer Ewell was a patient of your Uncle Richard's. Arthur and I dined.
And Mary Catherine is played by Nancy Lane, who didn't go on to do much.
Do I need to play the liar sound effect here, Chico? Nancy Lane went on to the Duck Factory, and she also appeared at least on 1 week of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
But rounding out the cast, America's favorite overbearing mother, as Teresa Falco, Doris Roberts. And really, do we even need to say anything more than that?
Yes, I'm going to add one thing. Mark my word. 2024, it was the thing on TV, Hall of Famer. Mark my word. I'm not saying I'm going to induct her. I'm not saying either of you are going to induct her. I'm not going to force you to do that, but she's going to be in the hall.
Next I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to argue with that.
You can't argue it. She has too good of a resume.
So the resultant comedy is sort of like Rhoda, except with Catholics instead of Jewish people, and in Philadelphia instead of New York City. Oh yeah, and somebody's rich. So we already went over the first episode, but here it is again. Episode one, the proposal. Angie and Brad begin falling for one another despite their different backgrounds. We all explained how this was going to go down. Nobody of note in this episode, so we'll just go on to episode two. Episode two, Wedding Wings. Teresa's fear of flying complicates Brad's father's desire to get to know Angie and her family better. And as the stewardess, sort of a Southern belle in her own right, Simone Griffith, like her character, Simone Griffith actually comes from Georgia, but has a theater arts major at the University of South Carolina. So what is her most notable role? As Annie in Death Race 2000. Episode 3. The Elopement. When Angie and Brad try to plan their wedding, and it turns into a nightmare because of their families, they decide to elope. Playing the sheriff in this episode, that's his name, the sheriff, Dolph Sweet, Carl Kaniski.
Yes!
Somebody who's going to be in law enforcement in about a year or two after Angie. He wasn't just Carl Kaniski, he was the chief. So this is Prentice. He's a sheriff in this episode. And then when he gets to give me a break, he's going to be the chief.
And they end up, because they're going to elope, at Shady Lane Motel after finding the Justice of the Peace had died, getting lost, and fixing a flat tire. And somebody steals the car with Brad asleep in it.
I was expecting you to make a reference to that Motor Lodge. Sadie's Motor Lodge, I think it was.
Hold on a second. Let me find whatever that Motor Lodge is out here.
Haha. Call back to last week. Got
it. Pines Motor Lodge.
Pines Motor, yeah. Shady Pines is where on Golden Girls.
Shady Pines, Ma! Shady Pines!
Yeah, Shady Pines Motor Lodge is like totally different.
Yeah, so none of this would happen if they just stayed at the Pines. Ha! Callback. Got him. Episode 4. The Morning After.
Time out. Wasn't that a movie with Jane Fonda?
Also the name of a song by Maureen McGovern. So we pick up from the previous episode. Angie and Brad have coffee the morning after their comically odd elopement, and they have to tell their families what happened. Hillary is welcoming of Angie and her family. Joyce and Teresa leave mad after being told the news, and things struggle to be straightened out. Episode 5. The Adjustment. Angie becomes bored after leaving her waitress job and moving into Brad's mansion. In an uncredited cameo as a coffee shop customer, Donnie Most.
Donnie Most, Donnie Most, he was Ralph on Happy Days.
Actually, it's Don Most now.
Donnie Most, Donnie Most, Sunday, Monday, Happy Days.
Episode 6, Teresa's date. Oh boy, are you guys ready for this? Brad's dad dates Angie's mom. That's it. That's the plot of the episode. Episode 7, The House Guests. Newlyweds Angie and Brad have unexpected house guests when Teresa and Marie are evicted from their apartment. Conflict arises when the relatives make themselves at home, and Teresa basically tries to run things because it's Doris freaking Roberts, and that's what she does.
Well, that's what mothers do. Let's just say that. Mothers or mothers-in-law in this case, if you're Robert Hayes' character. Yeah, that's what mothers or mothers-in-law do. They take control. Not that we have any experience in that.
We love our mothers.
Well, I'm talking about mothers-in-law. We don't have that experience.
No, I don't have a mother-in-law.
Well, you'd have to be married to have a mother-in-law. That's sort of a prerequisite.
Mother, I always love her. My mother. So treat her right. Treat her right.
And you said you were going to have anything to contribute to this episode, Greg.
Get out of my head, Chico. I was thinking the exact same thing.
You are a trooper and a gentleman, good sir.
Ah, Mom, you raised a good son, huh?
Episode 8, The Opportunity. Teresa encourages a reluctant Brad to hire Marie as his receptionist. At this point, Marie is working nights at a daycare. She works nights at a daycare, and now she's going to be Brad's receptionist. But when he does, it leads to chaos in his office. Well, you hire Deborah Lee Scott to be your receptionist. This is the sort of thing that happens.
Yeah, we said she was inept at password.
Episode 9, Joyce's Job. When her alimony payments end, Joyce is forced to do the unthinkable for a Benson. Find a job for the first time ever.
Do it. Say it. Get it out of your system. Just do it or else I'm going to do it.
Okay. Playing a hostess in this episode, Nitra Foles.
Oh, I think my Nugenics just went off.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Really, Mike? Try to be professional about this.
That went out the window a long time ago. I did not know a 115-year-old woman would do that to me.
Episode 10, The First Fight. Brad goes out with some old friends, drinks too much, and comes home late. This results in the couple's first big fight.
Well, it had to happen sooner or later.
Especially with friends named Chicky, Kitty, and Buddy, who are played respectively by Steven Johnson, Carol Willard, and Lois Young, none of whom have done anything of great importance, so we're just going to move on. Episode 11, Angie's Good Deed. Angie wants her friends to have the same happiness she has in being married. Even though he thinks it's a bad idea, Brad agrees to fix up one of his buddies with Angie's friend, Dee Dee. Episode 12, The Checkup. Angie's mother is having aches and pains and needs to see a doctor. She reluctantly agrees to a checkup with her son-in-law.
This can't end well. The mother-in-law getting checked by her son-in-law?
Well, look at it this way. It can't be worse than flying with her son-in-law, because that was pretty bad, if you remember. We have a character named Polly. He's played by David Elliott, who was in the cast of Jaws 2 and the art department of The Hunger Games: Catching Fire. And that was season 1. ABC got so much positive buzz that they ended up putting it on Thursday nights after Mork and Mindy, and it wasn't just a hit. It wasn't just a big hit. It was a major hit.
top five for the season hit.
It was number five behind Three's Company, Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy, and Happy Days. So yeah, ABC was in a good way in 1978 to 1979. And they were hoping to continue the winning ways in 1979 to 1980 when they pick up Angie for a second full season. And you would think that they could build off this momentum by having it move to another night to be in the presence of greatness. Yeah, that didn't happen. ABC totally messed it up.
You think it was going to happen? Nope.
And we'll go over how Angie went from one of the top draws of the network to something that was just, at the very best, okay. Right after these era-appropriate messages.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Just had a hamburger loaded with onions. Kiss me.
Onions?
Hey, kiss me. I got the signal.
Mmm, minty.
Signal mouthwash fights strong mouth odors.
I just ate garlic bread. Kiss me.
Garlic?
Come on, kiss me. I got the signal.
Hey, nice.
Signal fights strong mouth odors. Even garlic, even onions, gives you fresher, cleaner breath. Clinical tests prove it. A kiss will prove it.
Kiss me. I got the signal.
Oh, boy! Skydiver!
Pull the chute! Oh.
I went too much to the right.
Maybe one of these days they'll let me play. They never seem to get tired of playing Atari. Probably because Atari has so many different games to play. Games like basketball, football, chess, bowling, outlaw. More than 30 games that I never get to play.
I'll play with you, Daddy.
Thanks.
No other company offers you as many different video game cartridges as Atari. Saturday, Helen's out for some extra cash.
I think I can satisfy you.
On the ropers. And Detective School gets caught on the wrong side of a holdup.
You and look like a thief.
No, but your face is against the law.
Then on the Love Boat, two teens fake their way into the honeymoon suite, and it's left to Gopher to keep them apart. And on Fantasy Island, a high school wallflower gets revenge on the class bully by blossoming into a beauty. And a would-be Rocky takes on the champion of the world. Sunday, Rudolph and Frosty together for the first time in a new feature-length movie at 7, 6 Central and Mountain.
What a neat idea.
Then at 8:30, 7:30 Central and Mountain, Mork's in uniform as a Denver Bronco cheerleader.
We want more.
Sunday, Cheryl Ladd and Robert Urich hide a terrible secret inside their home when she was bad.
So Angie is riding high as one of the top shows on television. And for good reason. We have a really good cast, really well-produced TV show, really well-written format. But there's going to be some changes in season two. For one, Leonora Tuna was put in as the producer, and Brad would buy out the Liberty Coffee Shop, which Angie would turn around and sell to buy, of all things, a beauty salon.
What?
Brad would buy the coffee shop. Angie would flip it to buy a beauty salon. And then hire a hairstylist named Johnny, played by Tim Thomerson.
Oh, gosh! Tim Thomerson! Low-key making a Hall of Fame case.
Unfortunately, that would not leave any room for A, Dee Dee, or B, Hillary. Both of them would be gone for the majority of season two. Season two begins with Angie's old friends, When Angie's old friends come over to visit, she tries to hide the fact that she's very well off financially. We have the three Marys that we mentioned. We have Dee Dee Malloy. And then we have somebody named Carmella, played by Anne DeSalvo. Episode 2, The First Separation. Angie and Brad have a disagreement after he practices his speech for an upcoming convention, and she criticizes it as boring. David Elliott returns as Polly, but guess who plays a character named Maxie? Adrian's Med from TJ Hooker. He was also in Grease 2. Thank you, Kiesla.
No problem.
Episode 3.
I'm sorry, I just love the random input from Kiesla.
I love my sister. You know me. I love my sister.
Well, who doesn't? I just love how she just randomly chimes in there. Don't forget about Grease 2.
Who doesn't love their sister?
Episode... Hold on, Kiesla. I wish I could forget about Grease 2.
Michelle Pfeiffer wishes she could forget about Grease, too. She was in the damn thing.
She was the female lead.
I know. That's the joke.
Well, they might not know.
They know.
Oh, okay.
Episode 3. Moving day. Brad becomes upset when he's told by Angie that they're moving into a new place he hasn't seen.
What?
Yeah, they spend like the last 15 episodes in this massive mansion. There's nothing to do with it. So they move into a duplex where Angie and Brad live in one part of it and Brad practices his medicine in the other part of it. It's very simple. Playing Richard, a patient of Brad's, apparently, Jeremy Licht, who we're supposed to believe is Danny Ponce's twin brother on the Hogan Family. Can you? I can.
No, you're right about that. That's a hard sell.
Episode 4, Marie's Crush. Angie becomes alarmed when Marie develops a crush on Brad and then considers becoming a nun. Playing Mother Janet, that's her name, Mother Janet. Helen Paige Camp, who was on The Love Boat and The Incredible Hulk, but she was in 3 seminal episodes of The Fresh Prince as Margaret Firth, as in the wife of the husband who goes to the prison with Uncle Phil, where Uncle Phil gives the sheriff what for? Did you talk to their parents? No, because we're their parents. Did you talk to their lawyer? No, because we're their lawyer. So you let those two kids out, or I'll tie this place up in so much litigation that your grandchildren are going to need lawyers. Every time Uncle Phil gives a speech, it's epic. Episode 5, The Gift. Brad's father creates tension with Brad and Angie after he buys Angie an expensive fur coat for her birthday. One of many appearances of Richard Beauchamp as Hector. Of course, we know him for 13 episodes of Hunter as Carlos and 3 episodes of Hill Street Blues as Marty Rodriguez.
Another person in this episode. And if you want to talk about low-key making a case for the Hall of Fame, this is about as low-key of a case as you can make. Playing Bev is Kit McDonough. This is at least the 4th time we've talked about her. She was the wife on What's Alan Watching? She played Lois McCardle on Teachers Only. And she was on an episode of The Bad News Bears. So there's 4 entries.
Yep, one more and she gets her Hall of Fame card punched.
Potentially, but more importantly, one more reference, and she wins the Chevette. Never mind.
Call back the face to music. Boom! Got him!
No, they didn't give away Chevettes on Face of Music. No.
I thought they gave Chevettes on Face of Music.
No, I was doing like Tic Tac Toe or Joker.
Oh, that's right.
No, they gave away Datsuns on Face of Music. Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah, because Sandy Frank can only afford a Datsun.
Were you absent for that show? I'm just wondering. But also, I said the magic number is 5. If we ever get to the Rita Moreno show, if we can find it, she was in that, and that was a piece of junk. So just saying, there's number 5, and looking at her IMDb, that may be it. There is not going to be a number 5 besides that. Hold on. No. I just found she was on an episode of Mr. President. There's number 5. There's number 5. So there's your potential entry to the hall. And there's the Chevette for her. But still, if there's going to be a number 6, it's going to be the Rita Moreno show. If we can find it.
Wait a minute. We did talk about Mr. President. That's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. I said it's 5.
Okay. All right.
And just because, it's been 95 episodes since Greg talked about it. She was on an episode of Wings in season 7 in 1996.
Can you believe, guys, it's going to be almost 100 episodes? Because I mentioned for the first time ever I loved Wings.
I should have just kept my mouth shut. I'm sorry.
Episode 6, The Thief. Fed up with everyone coming over uninvited, Brad and Angie lie about going on vacation so that they can spend some time alone in their new home. Perhaps playing the thief, a character named Kenny, Peter Scolari, everybody's favorite bosom buddy. Yeah, I said it, Tom Hanks. Fight me.
No, everybody's favorite Newhart son-in-law. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. How about everybody's favorite mad scientist?
Oh, that's right, because he did play Wayne Szalinski on the TV show.
Yeah, you know who his wife was on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids TV show?
Who?
Barbara Allen Woods of Eden.
Really?
That soap opera that was produced by Playboy for USA?
Ooh.
That came on in sometimes after Silk Stockings?
Oh, when you've gotten your eugenics fix on Silk Stockings, you really need it to last. Like another hour. Mike is hanging his head in shame. He's like, really, Greg? You really said that? Yes.
No, I really can't believe you made a Silk Stockings reference, especially since during my summer break, that's literally how I spend 3 hours a day watching Silk Stockings.
Hey, you do you, boo. You do you, boo.
Hey, I just like how on every episode, they're in season 5, actually, earlier today, they showed the episode where Rob Estes got killed off.
Bro!
Season 5, gone. About halfway through the season. But anyhow,
the first show that he gets killed off of. The second one is CSI Miami. He plays a guy who is hired to clean crime scenes. And his ex-wife is Natalia Boafista, played by the lovely and talented Ava LaRue. She is a suspect in his murder.
So as I was saying, I'm watching all these episodes of Silk Stockings during my summer break, and I love just the variety of places that they interview people. It's like they're trying to maximize the TNA factor. Oh, they went to a strip club today. They went to a beach volleyball game, and all the girls in the background are wearing thongs. And oh, they went to some public park or some beach, and oh, everybody's walking around in a string bikini there. The TNA factor.
And you realize that at least once a season, Charlie Broyle has to get in on the questioning.
I think I've only seen him get on the questioning once. I think it was earlier this week. It was him and Rob Estes' character there poolside interviewing somebody. And of course, a couple females, right behind him, are wearing thong bikinis, showing their little tushies, walking right behind Charlie Brill.
Ooh.
I'm sure Mitzi McCall was at home saying, you son of a bitch, when you get home, I'm smacking you upside the head with this rolling pin.
Hold on, time
out. You better not have looked.
Time out. Didn't you say in one of the episodes Gilbert Gottfried was in?
He was yes, he was in an episode earlier this week, yes.
I got a question. Was Rhonda Shear in an episode of Salt Stalkers?
Well, aren't you lucky? I have IMDb up right now. Let me check.
Ooh, I can only hope she was on an episode of Salt Stalkers. They had to get everybody from Up All Night on Salt Stalkers.
I was going to make a mention of Dynaman, but that was Night Flight, not Up All Night. My mistake.
That's future installment.
Oh, Greg, wait, hold on, Greg. Greg.
Yeah.
This is like a double win. Not only was she on an episode of Silk Stockings, she was on an episode of Duckman. Two USA series.
What did she play on Duckman?
Rhonda Shear, of course. I mean, that's literally, it says Rhonda Shear voice.
Oh, wow. What a stretch. Rhonda Shear played herself on Duckman.
Remember, Ben Stein played himself on Duckman. Or he played somebody named Mr. Stein.
I'm looking at some stills on IMDb. Legitimately, she played herself. I mean, I see a blonde girl here giving Duckman a hug. And I may have to pull out my DVDs of Duckman to see this episode to see what part she had, because it looks, I'm guessing she's this blonde woman, but so yeah, she was on Duckman. She was on Silk Stockings. But getting back to Gilbert, oh my gosh, Gilbert should have won an award for what he did on Silk Stockings. I'm not even joking. That was a great episode. I know you're hearing me say the word an award and Silk Stockings, you're like, what?
Hold on. An award, Silk Stockings, and Gilbert Gottfried.
He did a good job. He was playing like some sort of sleazy, I want to say agent or manager of like a, I don't know if it was a nightclub or a strip club. I clearly wasn't paying that much attention. But he was funny. He did a damn good job on that.
I'm sorry for those who wanted to hear about Angie and you had to listen to the last 5-7 minutes talking about Silk Stockings and Gilbert Gottfried and Rhonda Shear.
And T's and A's, and T's and A's. Don't leave out the unimportant stuff.
Okay, so where were we? Episode 7.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait.
God's sakes, Mike.
No, this is quality content. I made a mistake. I said I didn't know if it was a nightclub or a strip club. It may have been more of a, well, you determine what it was. He was the manager of a club where mud wrestling was going on.
Mud wrestling?
Well, it could be either one of those.
Well, the thing is, at the end of the episode, Rob Estes and Gilbert and if this is true, oh my gosh, this is a callback to earlier in this episode. Oh no, it wasn't. I thought it was going to be Tim Thomerson. No, it was, I think, John O'Hurley. They were all fighting in the mud pit.
Oh yeah, that's right. A triple threat match. Rob Estes, Gilbert Gottfried, and John O'Hurley in a mud wrestling pit.
And of course, John O'Hurley would be there, so it would be classy as hell.
Getting tumbled in this mud pit. What do you mean it's classy as hell?
It's
how do you
John make mud wrestling freaking Hurley! Come on!
But how do you make mud wrestling classy?
I can guarantee you, Dave Meltzer, if he was reviewing that mud wrestling match, would say, 2.25 stars, didn't have Kenny Omega, match wasn't at the Tokyo Dome. Ass.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, now we're done talking about Silk Stockings. Episode 9 or whatever it is.
How many tangents can we fit in this damn episode? I don't know. Okay, episode 7. We're on episode 7 now. Vinny's return. Brad is initially unfazed when Angie's old flame, Vinny, comes to visit. However, it becomes clearly evident that Vinny is still attracted to Angie. Vinny Vicicio is played by Paul Popp. He was cast to co-star as Double J opposite John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. If you remember, Donna Pesco was also in Saturday Night Fever. playing up affecting was, I don't know if it was an affected Brooklyn accent or her natural Brooklyn accent, but she was there with Paul Pappy. So a bit of a reunion of sorts. Episode, oh my god, I've been waiting for this episode. I wanted to see Greg's reaction when I tell him who's in this episode. Episode 8, Uncle Cheech. Angie and Brad's lives are turned upside down when her obnoxious uncle comes to stay with them following his divorce. Kind of reads like season 2, episode 1 of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, especially when you consider that Uncle Cheech is played by the one, the only, Danny DeVito!
But Uncle Cheech, I'm sorry.
I'm waiting for a reaction and I'm getting nothing!
But did Uncle Cheech eat chili cheese fries out of a bowling ball?
No!
Well, that's why this got canceled after the second season. If he ate chili cheese fries out of a bowling ball, this would still be on.
You know what? It would have stood a fighting chance at least.
Did he go to a water fountain with a hot dog tray and drink water?
No.
Man, how many more things can we say about Danny DeVito related to It's Always Sunny? Was he the art dealer on Gugablogian at any point? Is Uncle Cheech?
Derivative.
Hold on. Do we have to talk about this past week's episode of It's Always Sunny?
We just talked about it.
Okay. This is what happens when I'm busy with baseball stats.
Mike just talked about it. It was basically bowling night, and Frank is eating chili cheese fries out of a bowling ball. And everybody's pissed drunk.
And he rolls the ball down the lane and the chili cheese is spilling out.
And you would think that it would not get any better than what we did last week with Risky Rats. It gets better.
And also you had Gail the Snail back.
You had Gail the Snail, yeah.
Yes. And Artemis. And Artemis. Yeah.
And the waitress. And the waitress. You had everybody. And Gail the Snail was snorting. Shella shuts up her nose.
Wait. Hold on. Didn't Frank have a threesome with Gail and Artemis in the back?
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Episode, yes.
Yes, he did. Yes. And it was glorious.
Spoiler here. Yeah. At the end of the episode, when Dee made her one pin after Dennis kept saying gutter ball, gutter ball, gutter ball. And the pins were all saying gutter ball, gutter ball, gutter ball. She hit one pin. She's celebrating and nobody's there because Artemis, Gail the Snail, and Frank went to do a threesome. And then Dennis and Charlie and Mac, they went to the Sixers game.
Wait, how could there be a Sixers game going on? Isn't this taking place at night?
Well, it's a Sixers game would be happening is on a Friday night. So, yeah, Sixers game would happen on a Friday night.
So how could they get to the arena in time? How would they get tickets?
Okay, I don't know about the continuity there and that explanation.
It's weird.
Maybe Gritty got him free tickets.
But, yeah, at the end of the episode, the only person left of the eight was the waitress. Because, like I said, the three guys not named Frank went to go to the Sixers game. And Frank and Artemis and Gail the Snail were getting on.
Maybe.
No, there's no maybe. They were getting on.
Oh, okay. All right. So also in this episode, Rory King as Melanie. Rory King from previous entry. I'm about to say this again. Unironically, I'm a big girl now. Episode 9. Family Feud. It is what you think it is. Brad and Angie's families face off on the game show Family Feud. Because ABC in the 70s, am I right? And of course, we have Richard Dawson playing himself, Gene Wood playing himself, and Carlo Imparato playing a guy named Petey.
Wouldn't be a guy named Petey, because at this point, Carl Imperato would have been like 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, he's a guy named, he's a guy. That's a guyish age. He's guy enough to have been in Fame in a couple of years. And, you know, when, by the time he's in Grey's Anatomy, he's not a guy anymore. He's a man.
Well, he was a man during Fame, but you know where else he was a man? The weeks where he appeared on Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
Episode 10, Harvey's Mother. Angie gets worried when an attractive divorced mother seems very interested in Brad and keeps making appointments with him. Oh my goodness gracious. Playing Loretta, Ellen Travolta. Playing her son Harvey, Corey Feldman.
You mean the Corey Feldman that was on like the first 15 episodes of Madam's Place?
Yep, the very same. And playing his sister Karen, Francine Tacker from The Paper Chase.
Hey, how about one more name? Playing Seal on this episode, Florence Hallop, the second night court bailiff after Selma Diamond, before Marcia Warfield.
Episode 11, Mary, Mary, Marries. When Brad and Angie find out that Mary, Mary just got engaged, they agree to hold her wedding at their home. Playing Douglas, I imagine this is the person that Mary, Mary is going to marry, G.W. Bailey, who is in the first season of St. Elsewhere, almost all the Police Academy movies.
He's that, Captain Harris, silly.
I know. That's why I was. That's what I was talking about. He's Captain Harris.
Yes, but he's in Mannequin,
the only '80s movie that truly matters.
That's right. What a great cast Mannequin had. You had Andrew McCarthy. You had Kim Cattrall. You had G.W. Bailey. You had Estelle Getty. You had James Spader.
Phyllis Newman.
What about Meshach Taylor?
Oh, Meshach. Hollywood!
You made that movie.
How could you not name Meshach Taylor? Why did I have to come up with that?
That movie Time made out. His career.
That's right. Time out. Let me get it right here. The Mannequin Blu-ray that I have in my hand from Olive Films. By the way,
this is CNN breaking news.
Olive Films, no more. I will hold this Blu-ray of Mannequin and my Blu-ray of 8 Men Out from Olive Films with pride. Thank you very much.
Episode 12, The Gambler. A trip to Atlantic City helps to rekindle Teresa's gambling addiction. Now, if you're like me, you know it doesn't cost but $10 to buy a train ticket from Philadelphia to Atlantic City. Because if you're like me, you're a degenerate gambler.
Were any of the casinos in Atlantic City run by the Philly Mafia?
Depends on your definition. Were they run by Soupy Sales and Buddy Hackett? No. Were one of them run by
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Maybe not in 1980, but yeah.
Maybe not in 1980, no.
But I'll tell you this, if Buddy Hackett and Soupy Sales ran a casino, I bet you they would have had a great takeout business at the casino.
I figure you do a good takeout business.
Good takeout business.
Yeah, we do a good takeout business. Takeout business.
Greg shoehorning the reference in just to hear that stupid sounder.
Hey, it's a Philadelphia-based TV show. We got both that reference and a reference to It's Always Sunny. I say we're doing pretty good right now.
And Mannequin is set in Philadelphia.
We love Philadelphia. It's a city of brotherly love, you know.
Philadelphia freedom!
Episode 13, Coffee Wars.
Coffee Wars. Now, Chico, I've heard of the Cola Wars, but I've never heard of a coffee war.
Then you've never been to a street corner where one side had a Krispy Kreme and the other side had a Dunkin'. or one side had a Dunkin' and the other side had a Starbucks.
Wait a minute. Did you say Dunkin'?
Oh, no. We're triggering Greg.
Hold on a second. Let me...
He was worried he wouldn't be able to contribute to this episode, and look at him.
We need to stop enabling him.
Angie's coffee shop existence is threatened by the arrival of a fast food restaurant. Angie tries to figure out how to keep her customers and stay in business, leading Brad to buy the coffee shop. Now, Greg.
What? Why? Why would you have Brad buy the coffee shop?
Because he's filthy, stinking rich, Greg.
All right. Here we go. Here's my Dunkachino clip of the day for you guys. Now get ready.
Something's brewing at D&D.
Wow!
Dunkachino!
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
What's my name?
Dunkachino.
It's a whole new game.
Dunkachino.
You want creamy goodness? I'm your friend. Say hello to my chocolate blend. Attica, ooh, latte light. This whole trial is out of sight. They pull me back in with hazelnut too. Caramel swirl, I know it was you. Everyone wants my Dunkachino. Can't get enough of my Dunkachino. Kids from 7 to 17 lining up for my Dunkachino. What's my name?
Dunkachino.
Dunkachino.
Is that Jack Black?
Yeah. Now, do you want to explain what the video is?
Dunkachino.
No, I really don't. No.
Dunkachino. But it's in VR chat.
Next episode, please.
Oh my gosh.
Episode 14. Angie and Brad's close encounter?
What? Of the third kind?
Some kind of something. Brad and Angie meet the new neighbors who introduce them to group therapy, which is designed to improve their marriage.
I got news for you. It's not going to improve their marriage.
No. Some of the characters on this episode. Playing Sissy is Lorna Patterson. I think she was on a week of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. But she was in Airplane and Airplane 2, so...
She was not on a week of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
Dang it. Earl Bowen, who passed away this year. Michael Tucci from It's Gary Shandling's Show. And playing Betsy, Rhea Perlman.
Ooh.
Hey, how about we tie in It's Always Sunny again? She played some neighbor who may have had a curse earlier this season.
What?
You missed that? The episode where she kept on getting her hand glued to doors. And the character played by Rhea Perlman, she was supposedly like cursed in some capacity. Yeah, it wasn't one of the better episodes this season. By no means is it a Risky Rats or The Gang Goes Bowling, but still, I mean, it's an episode with Rhea Perlman in it, and of course, let's make the natural connection. Rhea Perlman and Dan DeVito were married.
Humor writes itself.
Not even the humor. It's just that natural connection.
Episode 15, Beauty Parlor. Remember a couple of episodes where we had coffee wars and Angie was struggling to keep her customers and save her coffee establishment, only to have Brad swoop in and rescue everybody?
Yeah.
She decides to close the coffee shop and buy Rose's Beauty Salon with Teresa.
What? Okay.
Playing Rose is a lady by the name of Mary Gorman. She's not one of the three Marys, so I'm not going to worry too much about that. But she was in the original Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, where she played a hooker.
A hooker?
Yes. And she was in 10 in 1979, playing, ironically enough, a coffee shop waitress. Episode 6, Teresa's Gigolo.
Numbers are tough. It's episode 16.
just like the number of episodes of Uncle Croc's Block and the Hudson Brothers Razzle Dazzle Show.
Angie begins to suspect that Gianni is only taking her mother out on dates in an effort to buy the salon. Episode 17. Marie moves out. Marie has a fight with Teresa and moves in with her boyfriend. I'm guessing that would be Adrian's men as Maxie. Yeah, I can see it.
Well, sure as hell isn't Florence Hallop. Hey, it could be, but that'd be kind of weird.
Episode 18, Brad's best buddy. When Gianni considers quitting the salon, Angie suggests that Brad hang out with him in the hopes of changing his mind. The plan backfires when Gianni begins spending all of his time with Brad and Angie. Playing the role of a waiter, Milton James, back then credited as Milt Yameen, noted voiceover actor in Grand Theft Auto 5, Grand Theft Auto 4, Bully, Warcraft 3, Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, and Spyro 2 Ripto's Rage as Sir Moneybags and Basil the Explorer. Episode 19, February Fever. To help Angie get over the winter blues, Brad plans to have their long-awaited honeymoon in the Caribbean, but getting there proves to be a challenge. Florence Hallop, Tim Thomerson, and Tessa Richard return as their respective roles.
But playing a ticket agent in this episode, somebody we've talked about in the past, Ronnie Graham, where you would know him from. In the movie Spaceballs, he played the minister with the big mitre, the big, you know, Pope hat.
Now
oh, yeah. When you see that big Pope hat, yeah, you know exactly who that is. But also, we talked about him previously because he was on an episode of The Nut House. So he actually sort of aligns very nicely in the Mel Brooks universe, if you will, between Spaceballs, The Nut House, and he was in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and History of the World Part 1. And he was on the Ghostbusters in 1975, so that's at least the third time we've talked about him.
Episode 20. The President's Coming! The President's Coming!
Oh, geez. Is this an episode about Bill Clinton?
When the President of the United States accepts Brad's father's invitation to dinner, Angie must keep it a secret from everyone, including her mother. Because Teresa Falco loves to talk. Episode 21, The Kid Down the Block. Brad and Angie help a boy with his stage fright by doing a rehearsal of Cinderella with him at their home. Couple people we talked about in the past. Michael Delano as Mr. Stewart, the father. Of course, Michael Delano was the DJ on the Super Train, which runs off of Time Lord technology. And playing Matthew Stewart, Mino Pelucci from Voyagers.
He's getting a Hall of Fame resume. What is this? This is at least the fourth episode we've talked about him on. Angie, the Bad News Bears, and obviously Voyagers, Manimal.
Yeah. That's four.
That's four. I think he's one away.
And hold on, future entry, Best of the West with Leonard Fry.
And Helltown with Robert Blake, which I am pretty sure is on the list. Didn't even mention he did an episode of 10 Speed and Brown Shoe, so that's one.
That's it. That's what it was.
And then Angie is two.
And Bad News Bears.
Bad News Bears is three. Manimal is four. Four.
Voyagers is five.
And Voyagers is five. I think he's got a Hall of Fame case.
We shall see sometime next year.
Stay tuned.
Episode 22, Friends in Need. Brad and Angie go out of their way to help the three Marys get through their respective problems. In a return performance as Father Ortelli, Martin Ferrero, who was in Jurassic Park, Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, and Heat. He played Gennaro in Jurassic Park. If I'm not mistaken, the first person to get eaten by a T-Rex. Greg, he was an Air Bud World Pup.
What was that?
Air Bud World Pup.
Oh my! Air Bud World Pup. Get that garbage out of here.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Episode 23, Angie and the Doctor. No, Tom Baker was not in this episode.
Oh.
When Brad injures his back and cannot run his practice, Angie and Brad are surprised when his temporary replacement is a young, attractive female doctor, Dr. Walker, played by Shelley Smith.
And we've talked enough about Shelley Smith in the recent past. We just talked about her a couple of episodes ago on Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Not to mention, she was also in previous entry Lady Blue.
And 10 Speed and Brown Shoe. So there's four. There. Oh, hold on. Well, this one, I don't know if this will put her in Hall contention, but she's on at least a week of Match Game Hollywood Scores Hour, it appears. So technically four shows and appeared on a week of Match Game Hollywood Scores Hour?
At the final episode, Angie and Joyce go to jail. Angie and Joyce flash back to the day when they were arrested while on a shopping trip.
Boy, sounds like a bottle episode to me.
Yep. And playing Debbie in that bottle episode, Eileen Graff, formerly of Supertrain, future of Mr. Belvedere. That's the show. And again, well written, well produced, well acted. Everybody had chemistry with each other. So the question remains, as it always does on this show, what happened? Because May came around, ABC was renewing a buttload of shows and greenlighting a buttload of shows for the fall, and Angie was not on the list for season three.
Okay, we'll break it down. Let's start with looking at the schedule, because we talked about how the show changed time slots, or days rather, for season two. On premiere night, it aired against the second half hour of Little Women, presuming either a TV series or a miniseries on NBC. And then on CBS, it was going up against the second half hour of The Waltons. Now, mind you, at this point, The Waltons is in its third to last season because it got canceled in 81 or ended in 81. So, again, decent competition on one side, Little Women, irrelevant. But the lineup it was with, I mean, this is a superstar lineup. If you're talking about 1979, this is a great lineup. Mork and Mindy, Angie, Barney Miller, Soap, Family. That's three great hours of television. And then to start season two, it was on Tuesday nights at 8:30, after Happy Days, before Three's Company, 9:30 was Taxi. Then most of that season, you had Heart to Heart. Again, solid lineup. And it went up against California Fever on CBS. And, oh, I hate saying this because Berg is going to get all emotional. The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo on NBC. You don't miss Sheriff Lobo?
Who missed Sheriff Lobo?
But then it moved again to Monday nights after Monday Night Football wrapped up. So we're talking January, February of 1980. And again, half the competition, not too bad. The other half, bad. CBS was airing something called The Last Resort, a sitcom that really, I took a look to see who was in the cast of that. There's a couple names we mentioned, but nobody major. But on NBC, the second half hour of a little show called Little House on the Prairie.
Don't!
That's one way of phrasing it. But then it got moved to Saturday nights. So it went from Tuesday night to Monday night to Saturday night. This is not going to end well, just saying.
Besides being buried on Saturday nights at 8 p.m. on ABC, Angie went up against the first hour of the Tim Conway Show on CBS and BJ and the Bear on NBC, the first half hour of that show.
I actually charted everything out here. In 1979, Laverne and Shirley moved from Tuesday at 8:30 to Thursday at 8, then back to Tuesday at 8:30. The Ropers moved from Tuesday at 10 to Saturday at 8, then to Thursday at 9:30. Mork and Mindy moved from Thursday to Sunday. Welcome Back, Connor moved from Saturday to Friday to canceled. Happy Days, Three's Company, Barney Miller, and Taxi didn't move at all. So to make a long story short, Angie died so Laverne and Shirley could live.
Was it really worth it? Let's be honest. No.
Well, also, very telling is the Nielsen ratings. I have the ratings for February of 1980. Now, we talked about Angie being the number five series of the 1978-79 season. Out of 68 episodes this week in February of 1980, would you care to take a guess as to where Angie ranked?
42.
No. Greg, you want to take a guess?
Wait, what did you say?
Of 68 shows in February 1980, where did Angie rank?
Well, I can't say 69, obviously. 68.
Well, it's not 68.
Well, I'm going to go 59.
Oh, Greg, you're one off. 58th.
Ooh.
But listen to the shows just in that general area. 60th is Laverne and Shirley. So Laverne and Shirley was getting worse ratings than Angie at this point. The Ropers was at 56. One in a Million, which we've talked about, was 61st. And really, most everything else is stuff we're not going to talk about. Nothing memorable there. So your top five show in basically, gosh, what, about 8 months? Went from top five to 10th from the bottom, 11th from the bottom. And yeah, you said Angie got killed off so it could save Laverne and Shirley. I agree with that. It was a sacrificial lamb. Plus also, since we just talked about the Ropers, looking at this before the show, I looked at Angie and you know exactly what I thought? I thought it mimicked exactly what the Ropers did. Because it went through the same type of process. Good first season, second season, not so good. And it got canceled. So I see a lot of parallels there even. Not that they're similar or the same type of show, but still, you see the parallel of a good first season and second season just basically falling off the face of the earth.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But if you want like an actual answer to why this show got canceled, one person that you should absolutely not ask is Donna Pascoe herself. After giving the show a 50-50 shot at renewal, she said, "I don't try to understand it anymore. You have to take it as a big chess game, and the only person who sees the total logic is the person making the moves." I've seen the moves that ABC would make in 1980. Hindsight is 2020, and I'll just leave it at that. The show never really went away. It would come back in a couple of years to be sort of the leadoff of their daytime lineup. You know, when ABC would have Trivia Trap, Family Feud, reruns of Angie, and something else. And people watched those reruns. They fell in love with the show. Of course, it didn't get a second chance. I mean, you got 36 episodes out of it. That was it. But yeah, the show really didn't go away after cancellation. And in 2017, the show actually did get a home video release thanks to Visual Entertainment and CBS DVD, because this was a Paramount Television production. Of course, if you can't be bothered with the trifles of physical media or paying money, you can watch all 36 episodes on YouTube for free, unofficially.
And also, they are on YouTube, but for reasons we mentioned earlier, the opening and closing themes are not intact. We mentioned that at the top of the show. Why?
Oh, boo.
Well, if the open means that much, we're sorry, but the show itself is intact.
Don't cry for anybody involved with this show. Doris Roberts would, of course, go on to play a similar to but legally distinct from character on Everybody Loves Raymond. Deborah Lee Scott would continue playing any game show that would have her until her untimely death. Donna Pesco, of course, would find later roles on Out of This World and Even Stevens. And Robert Hayes would be only a couple of months from the role that would make his career. Angie started out with a whole lot of promise, but then ABC mucked things up, losing the ratings race to CBS in the process. And Angie sadly became just a thing on TV. Well, you can let the love show, let the love grow over at itwasathingontv.com, where we have our previous entries, all almost 400 of them. We're talking about minisodes, live watches, all of our episodes, including the one we did earlier this week with the Hall of Fame induction. Of course, we're on all social media at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And we are available wherever fine podcasts can be downloaded or streamed. Like and subscribe, rate, review, 5 stars only, because positive vibes only.
And don't forget, we are on Threads, just like all the other cool kids are doing. We're at Threads at It Was a Thing on TV.
And we're also on YouTube. We don't have the theme song, but we do have the bell. And if you hit it, you will stay up to date with all of our future entries, including something we have next week. Hard-hitting female journalists. Jessica Savage, Barbara Walters, Connie Chung, Meredith Vieira, Katie Couric, Nora O'Donnell, Rachel Maddow, and somebody who was overlooked after 13 weeks. We'll tell you all about her career and why it had such an abrupt end next time, right here on It Was a Thing on TV. Thank you ever so much for listening. Please be kind to one another, and we will see you for the next one.
Wow!
The number of children in an average American family. You said...
two.
Zwei.
Yes.
One of each.
Mm-hmm.
Survey said. Oh! Color of a parakeet. You said green. Mm-hmm. Survey said.
Oh! Oh, I should never work like Fanny.
Popular form of recreation. You disappointed me here just a little when you said tennis. Survey said.
Oh!
I have to tell you that this little, you are shaking.
I know.
Hyperventilating.
I'm doing all of it and I feel like fading, so hold me up.
Oh,
oh gosh. Okay.
Oh, you've done so well, you got no problem.
Thank you.
If you do fall, go that way.
Okay.
Look, I just had it dry cleaned.
Oh.
common color to paint a room. And you said, white, survey said.
Oh, gosh, Ma. Yes.
Your Ma's proud of you.
Yeah.
And she's proud of you.
She can't get over all the times you kissed her that night. Oh, no, I mean when she came to the show. Like you met him.
A sport whose players go to training camps. You said...
They do, don't they?
Football. They do indeed.
Yeah.
And you are 23 points away from $10,000 and the fact that we'll never see Robert again. That's the only thing that I should have pointed out in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
He has to move on to another series. Survey said... That you gave me every number one answer except the first one, which was the number of children in the average American family. You said two. Three was the answer. Oh. Would you like to, we'll talk about this during the break. We'll be back right after this.
All right, it's a quickie version of the Joey Gallo update. Quickie theme song.
It's the Joey Gallo update.
This past week was the All-Star break. Not a lot of games were played. However, Joey Gallo had one hit since the last time we talked, and it happened to be a home run against Oakland. His batting average is at 187. There's the ending. Have a good rest of the week.